This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Transcend Human Podcast. Great to be with you. May 6th, 2024. So welcome to all of you, to those who have been around for a while. You know, we're kind of in a new adventure here on the show, a series called the Transcend Trilogy, which who even knows how long this is going to go. We are on episode 7 for this series, 183 for the podcast in general. And, you know, this series is basically going to go as long as it needs to go, because it's following me on this journey toward writing a novel, or writing a trilogy in this case. And so that's the journey we're on together. Like I said, if you've been here for a while, thanks for sticking with me. If you're brand new, you'll realize that things have changed dramatically in the last, well, at the beginning of this year. So whoever you are, longtime listener or brand new, great to have you with me today. So what I wanted to do this week is to talk about world building. So I called the episode World Building 101, and we're going to walk through that. Chapter 1, Do I Need to World Build? Chapter 2, Earth in the Future with a Twist. And Chapter 3, How Far is Too Far? Chapter 1, Do I Need to World Build? The whole concept of world building fascinates me, especially when it comes to building a world that you've never seen before. So like a magical one that isn't even possible based on our scientific knowledge. But as we'll see today, world building isn't just for those wild and crazy stories that take place outside of our reality. World building is really something that you need to do no matter what kind of story you're telling. So I found this podcast the other day. It's called The Kate and Abby Show, or The Kate and Abby Podcast. And basically, it's two sisters, both writers, and they have a podcast where they just talk about all things writing. And so I found a couple episodes and a couple just short clips on YouTube where they talk about world building. The first was just a separate one-off clip by Abby, where she really just talks about how world building is done poorly or incorrectly. So she explains that a lot of authors will do a massive, what we would call like a data dump, right? A huge information dump right at the beginning of the book. And the reason we do that is because we're so excited about this amazing world that we've created. And we think that we need to explain it all to the reader so that they can appreciate it as much as we do. The problem is this doesn't work. The reader often gets bored, bogged down with all the details, and they're more likely to put the book down. The other thing she says is that when writers aren't fully clued into this concept and really aware of how to do world building well, they tend to fall into the habit of telling versus showing. So what'll happen is they'll add too much exposition, right? Because they're basically making the world up as they go, and they feel like they need to explain all of these chunks of information about their world as they go in order to bring up or bring the reader along with them. And we'll see why that's a problem in a minute. The other thing she says is that what we're trying to do is we provide too much information versus only the important information about our world. So her biggest takeaway on this little clip was to basically have your world building done before you begin. So have all of your information ready to go, have it all written out somewhere else so that you really, really, really understand your world before you start writing. Then she says to think small. So what is it about the world that immediately impacts my character or my protagonist? Why does it matter? How does it impact the protagonist? As an external or internal struggle, how does the world impact what's going on right now in the life of my protagonist? And then the world needs to be important to the development of your character. In other words, if you're just giving random information about your world that has nothing to do with your character or the protagonist's story arc or character arc, then it's really not necessary. She uses two examples. She gives a good example and a bad example. Her example of good world building is the Chronicles of Narnia, basically the movie, the first movie in the series. And the reason why she says this is a good example is because it's really an example of the author slow burning the world building. In other words, little by little by little, the story unfolds, right? As a new character enters Narnia, a new piece of information is given about the world, but only a piece of information that applies to that protagonist as they're experiencing the new world. And over time, each of these pieces adds up, and you start to get a really good picture of the world that you're living in. In terms of a bad example, she used Divergent. So what Divergent does at the beginning, it gives huge doses of exposition about the world, but not really about Triss, the protagonist. In fact, it doesn't even show her at the very beginning of the movie. It's just all about explaining what the world's like, why it is the way it is, how it came to be that way. And so those are just two examples of the different ways that world building can be incorporated into your story. Now, that was Abby separately, but there is an episode of the Kate and Abby podcast where both of them kind of talk about world building. And they kind of reiterate this whole concept I said at the beginning, where world building seems like something that you would use for sci-fi and fantasy. But it's not just for those genres. It's actually for every single story that we tell, from fantasy all the way to just contemporary fiction. Even if it's in the real world, right? Even if it's in, if your story is set today in San Francisco, it's going to be a world that you're going to have to explain. You're going to have to explain the city itself, what part of the city you're in, what areas of the city these characters are experiencing and living in and working in. And just by creating that environment, even though it's real, I can go look at it on a map, it's still unique to this story and to these characters, right? So in that case, you realize that world building isn't just for huge world environments that you're creating that are unrealistic or fantasy or sci-fi. You actually need to do it for every single story you tell. Now, the problem with not doing that, according to these girls, is they basically explain that world building that doesn't happen well puts the reader into this thing called white room syndrome, where basically they're asking, what am I looking at? Where am I? And what happens here? Right? Because you haven't explained, you haven't given them some detail about where they're at, what they're doing, how they're doing it, where they're doing it. And so there may be some really crazy interactions and amazing dialogue going on, but if it isn't in a setting that the user can or the reader can connect to, then you're going to have problems. So it's basically the environment, like I said, the environment or the setting for your story, and you have to be able to describe it, not in great depth, but enough to where the reader actually wants to know more and they feel comfortable with what's going on in that environment. One of the things they said is that we tend to overdo it because we're interested in it or we're invested in it, right? If I spent hours and hours and hours of time researching my settings and my locations and coming up with an amazing, let's say that I have like a magic system within my world where certain people can do certain things that are more than human, right? Magic. I might get so invested in that I tend to overdo it in my story because I'm so excited about it. But unfortunately, the reader doesn't really care. They need very little information in order to be invested in your story. Because what they're invested in isn't the world. It isn't the magic system. What they're invested in are the characters. And that's what you really have to focus on. I also found an article by Masterclass that basically admits that world building is typically viewed as a sci-fi fantasy thing as well. And it gives four examples of why we think that. So if you think about series like Game of Thrones, the Harry Potter movies, Star Wars, even games, like there's a Dungeons and Dragons game that requires a massive amount of world building in order to play the game, right? So these are examples of how our, you know, traditionally we think of world building in these types of environments where it's just a whole different world with magic or fantasy or things like that that just don't exist in the world today. And then the article goes on to give 8 tips for successful world building. So tip number 1, decide where to start. So at some point you have to sit down and think through your story and decide where this story is going to take place. Tip number 2, list the rules and the laws. So if it's set in a normal environment in today's day and age, this part is kind of done for you, right? Because the laws of the land and the rules of the city or the town or the country that you live in, all of that stuff already exists and people will already understand that. But let's say you live in a futuristic world on another planet. The rules and the laws of that civilization or that society may be completely different. Or if you go way back in time historically, obviously the rules and the laws were completely different back then. So you really have to get some of those things straight depending on where you decided to start. Tip number 3, establish the type of world that you want. So this is kind of just piggybacking off of number 1. When you decide where you're going to start, you have to then establish that type of world, right? Is it realistic? Is it fantasy? Is it sci-fi? And really determine what that world is going to become. Tip number 4, describe the environment. So again, just look around this world of yours in your mind's eye. What does it look like? What does it sound like? What does transportation look like, right? All of those different things. You have to define the environment that this story is going to live in. Tip number 5, define the culture. So within this world that you're building, you're going to have a culture or a society or societal norms. Like, how do people interact with each other? What are they interested in? What do they like? How do they interact with each other? You're going to need to define some of that stuff so that when you're writing your story and writing your dialogue, it makes sense to that world. Tip number 6, define the language. So again, it can just be English if you're writing in English and it's an English world, or English is the language spoken in your world, then, you know, that piece is already kind of done for you. All the way up to just absolute craziness, like in Lord of the Rings, where the elves have their own specific language, an actual written language. You could spend hours and hours and hours coming up with that kind of stuff for your story, and then incorporate it somehow into your book. Number 7, identify the history. So you're going to want to have some level of history or backstory about your world, because stories never start right at the beginning of something, right? Stories are always, as a reader, you are being thrown into a story somewhere in the middle. So the backstory is super important to every story that you read or every story that you experience. So you're going to have to do some of that historical work. And then finally, number 8, use existing works to inspire. So as always, when you think about the action genre or the horror genre or the fantasy genre, you're going to automatically think of some high-level books that are what we would call masterworks within that genre. So use those books, read those books, see how the author built their world, and use that to inspire you in your work. Obviously, we're not copying, we're not plagiarizing, but if you don't have a good understanding of how the masters did some of these things, you're going to have a hard time coming up with it on your own. Now, in my research, I even found platforms that suggest that they can help you work through this process of world building. So one platform I found was called Milanote, M-I-L-A-N-O-T-E. Basically, it's built for all sorts of creative pursuits, but world building is one of the things specifically that they say that you can do with it. Scrivener is obviously one of the mainstays for people who write novels and write books. Very widely used. And a lot of this stuff comes baked in, right? There's an actual folder structure with folders for characters and settings, things like that. Things that can easily be used for your world building, including like digital corkboards, where you could actually pin images that help you to describe the world that you're trying to create, things like that. For me, Scrivener was a useful tool, but a really steep learning curve. And at some point, I found myself back in Google Docs just because it's easy to use. And the other thing that I found is that I wanted to share my work with friends who are interested, friends who are like, oh, I'd love to read, you know, your first chapter or whatever. So it's so easy in Google Docs to just share certain pages or certain elements with other people. And so that was another reason why I gravitated back to Google Docs. But those are just some platforms, obviously, that you can use for not only writing, but for world building. So to summarize, world building isn't just for sci-fi and fantasy, though it is a very big part of those genres, to be sure. At the end of the day, world building is required for every single story we tell. If you don't define the world that the story is being told in, the reader is going to feel less grounded, potentially even lost. And that probably means that they're going to stop reading. One final illustration would be, let's say that you're writing your entire story and the entire thing takes place on a boat. That is your world. You're going to literally have to world build about that boat, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it sounds like, you know, how many rooms are on the boat, how many different areas of the boat that the characters have access to, different places where the characters meet on the boat, whether it be the galley or big ballrooms or, you know, things like that. You're going to have to define all of those things and piece by piece give your reader information about the boat so that they feel comfortable in that environment. All right, chapter 2. Earth in the future with a twist. So I wanted to move to my big idea and the world building that was kind of required for it. Simply put, my story takes place on Earth in the future with a twist. But before I unpack that, let's kind of back the bus up a little bit to the early days. So when I first got my big idea and started thinking it through, at this point, world building wasn't even on my mind. Like, that was the farthest thing from my mind. At this point, all I was interested in was plot, the external plot. I mean, in the dream that I had, where I kind of received this entire plot story, the things that I remember seeing in this dream were related to the inciting incident, some of the progressive complications, the climax, and the resolution. And that was for the entire trilogy, no less, not for a specific book, for this entire overarching story. Now, I remember glimpses of, you know, images and things like that in this dream that would help me to world build, right? Because I saw certain countries or certain elements of outer space or a scene that took place in a cave, for example. So I have these things as part of that memory, but I didn't really focus on that. I focused more on the higher level, external driven story, the plot. And that's pretty high level, right? So that piece required a lot of fleshing out, even to just become a complete story that people would choose to invest time into. And remember, this is a trilogy. So a reader is going to have to invest even more time than just a one-off novel. But from receiving the big idea, I moved directly into skeleton mode, what I would just call skeleton mode. So I had some of the major bones in the body of the story, but I needed to start adding in some medium-sized bones and then find the smaller bones and eventually the super tiny bones, right? The ones that make up the fingers and the feet. For me, the medium bones turned out to be things like my four quadrant document. So really getting the four sections of each of the three books documented. From there, I moved to the story spreadsheet, the one document to rule them all kind of a thing, where there's literally a column for every single scene in the book, and then rows of data that are associated with each of those scenes. And then I started fleshing out each scene with 2 to 6 sentences, basically creating a comprehensive outline for the entirety of the trilogy, but mainly focused on book one. I'm going to put off doing all of the scene work for book two and book three until later, but I really feel like I need to get those 2 to 6 sentence descriptions for every scene in book one out and ready before I start writing the story. Now, little side note here. I mean, I act like that was just a very simple thing. Like, oh yeah, I just sat down and wrote 2 to 6 sentences for each of the different scenes. But this was a really big chunk of time, right? So this was a good 2, 3, 4 week process where I was getting up in the morning and I was basically trying to come up with these descriptions for each scene in book one. And I wanted to do it outside of the massive one spreadsheet to rule them all. I wanted to do them a little more abstractly or a little bit more, I don't even know the word for it. But so I think it was Michael Crichton that we had talked about when we talked about his style of writing and some of the techniques that he used. What he would do is he would take a small stack of 3x5 cards with him everywhere he went. And as he came up with ideas, he would write them on the 3x5 card as an idea for a scene or an idea for a section of scenes or whatever. And when he filled up all of those cards, he would throw them in a box and he would get another stack and take that stack with him. And he would just keep doing that until at some point he felt like he had enough ideas. He'd put enough things down on these 3x5 cards that he had a good start for his book. So then what he would do is he would grab the box, take out all the 3x5 cards, you know, throw them all over the floor, and basically start arranging them in such a way that he felt worked for a story. Once he got all of those laid out and put in place, it was time to write the story. So you gather up all your cards, you put it in a little box, and then that became your routine for writing. You would sit down the next morning, you would pull out the next card, and you would write the scene that card was describing. That card goes back in the back of the box. Next morning, you wake up, pull out the next card, write that scene. And you just keep doing that until you have an entire book. I really love that concept. I'm just not super interested in writing my ideas down on physical 3x5 cards. So what I did is I tried to find an app that might work in a similar way, right? With the ability to create digital 3x5 cards and then archive them in a way that you could then kind of move them around, drag them and drop them, stuff like that. But to be honest, I didn't really find any apps that looked like they were specifically built for that reason. A lot of the apps I found were apps meant for flashcards, right? So it would let you create these cards, and the whole point of the cards were then to go back through them with a question on the front and an answer on the back, and allow you to do flashcards to help study for a test or, you know, something like that. So I just got frustrated because I could not find something that looked like it would really work. And so with me being in Google most of the time, at some point I found Google Slides. And I found out that you could get a template that looks just like a 3x5 card and use that template in Google Slides. So that's what I did. I basically used Google Slides to create these 3x5 cards, digital 3x5 cards with a short description, a title and a description for each of the first 20 scenes in my book, in book one. On the desktop, it works really great, right? You see this grid of 3x5 cards and you can read them pretty easily and you can drag them and drop them around. I think it'll work really great. On mobile, not so much. On mobile, it's literally just card after card after card and you have to sit and scroll through them. And I don't even know if you can really drag and drop them that easily on mobile. So it's going to have to be a desktop thing, but that's fine. But what I really wanted was a quick and easy way to add these cards when I'm just out and about, right? When I'm out at lunch somewhere or out at dinner or I'm at a movie or I'm in church or something, just random places when an idea hits me about the book, I want a really easy way to document those things. So between Google Slides and one of their other things, let me see what that's called, Google Keep, actually. So Google Keep is kind of a quick note-taking platform that Google has that works really well on a phone, and it shows up really nicely in Google Docs. So what I can do with Google Keep is I can be in the moment. I can be like, oh, that'd make a great scene for the novel. Let me give it a quick title. Let me give a little description so that I don't forget it. And now it's in Google Keep. Then when I go into my Google Doc, there's a little tray of icons on the right, and Google Keep is one of those icons. So if you click it, it slides out, and there's your Google Keep notes right there for you. So it's the perfect way of keeping all of your stuff integrated. Now, if you are a Scrivener person, obviously Scrivener is meant to be a one-stop shop for a writer. So all of those little elements are all built into Scrivener. And I didn't use it long enough to know, you know, if there's a mobile feature like that, but I'm assuming if there's a mobile app for Scrivener, I'm assuming that it's all baked in there somewhere for you. So if you wanted to take a quick note or do even like a sticky note, like just take a quick note, slap it on there, and then you won't forget it. But that's what I'm using. So Google Slides and Google Keep in order to come up with some of these quick and easy descriptions of scenes so that I can get this fleshed entirely out for book one. Now, where am I at, you ask? I've finished 20. So the inciting incident, the opening or beginning hook or whatever you want to call the first 25% of the book, I have those 20 scenes fleshed out. My goal next is to continue to work through the rest of book one, which will be another anywhere from 40 to 60 scenes in order to wrap up book one. But having that started and seeing the finish line with my outline, I've really been able to start looking for some of the smaller bones, right? So if those things were medium-sized bones, some of the smaller bones are things like characters, right? So I realized that I've got a lot of work to do on my characters. I have a lot of characters. I really need to figure out some information about each of them so that when I start writing, I'll have this database to draw from. So I created another spreadsheet, this one for all of the characters, where I can basically document everything from their hair color and their race and their gender to things like their habits and their mannerisms. And then more important pieces like their backstory and the internal conflict that's going on within that character. After that, I realized that I hadn't done much in the way of documenting settings or locations. So I started another spreadsheet where I can list each of the different settings that I'm at in the book, and then document things like the climate, the people, the food, maybe the danger level that exists in that environment, things like that. Then at some point, I came to a stunning realization. I hadn't even begun to tackle world building. I haven't even gone down that road yet, right? It's something that I had never touched, never even thought about. And I realized, oh, that's right, I need to do that still, right? And that's probably a massive undertaking. I think what got me thinking about it was the fact that, I was creating these spreadsheets, one for characters and one for settings and locations. And I realized, okay, settings and locations, that's kind of a little bit like world building, right? I need to define what some of these settings and some of these locations look like. But these settings and locations exist in a bigger thing called my world. And I think why I hadn't gotten around to doing this is because in my brain, I was just thinking, well, it's taking place in the world, like in our world. So I don't really need to define it because it's just taking place in our world. But then I remembered, but it's not in our world right here, right now. It's in a world in the future. So it's reality, it's realistic, it's similar cities, similar countries, and all of that, but it's in the future. And that's when I was like, oh no, like I have a lot of work to do. I think I pictured J.K. Rowling standing in front of a massive whiteboard and corkboards with a map of the world and an exploded map of England, and then overlaying maps with maps from the Wizarding World, where Hogwarts is, and, you know, along with all of the other worlds and cities and little places that she had made up, along with, you know, lists of things like spells and potions and magical items that just don't exist in the real world. Then I pictured J.R.R. Tolkien doing the same thing for Lord of the Rings, and then Michael Crichton doing the same thing for Jurassic Park. And immediately I started to shake. I got super nervous about my ability to think up that much information off the top of my head. But at the same time, I also started to get excited about it, right? So one morning I sat down and I was like, okay, today is going to be all about world building. And I sat there, fingers on the keyboard, where do I start? And it took a while, but then the questions started to come. So in my big idea, in my trilogy, there are a group of people on a deep space rover capable of reaching distances much greater in space than we can reach now. Now, if this is true, then my story has to be in the future, right? But how far is far enough in the future? So I had to answer that question, and I settled on, well, what if it was 100 years from now? That's a safe round number. So let's just say that my story takes place in 2125. The prologue of book one starts with a flashback to something that happened 100 years before that, which means it basically happens right here, right now, today, in our time, in 2024, 2025. Next, I thought to myself, if the story takes place in 2125, things are going to look a whole lot different than they look today, especially when it comes to technology, right? Think about the AI that we have right now. We're like right on the edge, right on the brink of starting into things that we don't even understand. Think about what it can do today and what people think it might be able to do in 5 years. Now, what would it look like in another 95 years? Crazy, right? How technologically advanced we might be in 2125. And from there, the ideas just started to flow. I created a doc just for world building, and I basically wrote down just as the content came to my head, the ideas came to my head, I just started writing down information in the following categories about this future world, right? So I have a section in the document about dates and times. So the dates and the times in the book, kind of creating my timeline. Then I have a section about the physical world environment. What does that look like? What does the physical world look like? Then I have a section about the government. What does the local US government look like? What does the world government look like? I have a section about travel. So with this advanced civilization we're living in, what does travel look like? What do cars look like? Planes, trains, you know, do we still have all those things? Can we teleport ourselves? I mean, by that time, who knows, right? Next, what does technology look like? So what does a phone look like? What do computers look like? What's the level of technology that this society is using, and how does it impact their life? What does food look like in the future? Medical care, the education system. What does it look like to work or be employed 100 years from now? Religions of the world, are they all the same or are they different? Religious terminology. In my world, what could religious terminology be used that might be a little different than it is today? And then even things like entertainment, right? Do people go to movies? Do they go to the theater? Does all that stuff still exist? Or is there a whole different genre of entertainment, you know, 100 years from now? And before I knew it, I had written over 3,000 words. that's basically two full scenes of a book, right? And it wasn't writing paragraphs. Most of it was short sentences and phrases, just explaining ideas and concepts that I needed to flesh out, answering questions that I knew needed to be answered in order to tell a good story. So this means that my 3,000 words ended up stretching over 13 pages worth of content just on world building. And I don't even know if that's enough. I mean, I came up with a lot of stuff, but I'm assuming I'll need to go into even more depth over time to ensure that things make sense and to make sure that there aren't these gaping plot holes because of the technology that I'm coming up with, or things that the reader will see that just doesn't make sense as they're reading it. But what about the twist, you ask? So I said Earth in the future with a twist. Well, the twist part is the fun part, right? It's the little bit of world building that crosses the line between reality and fantasy. In fact, I just read an article the other day about urban fantasy. It's something, I mean, I'd heard that concept before, but I never really understood what it meant. And after reading the article, I started to feel like I had come home. I realized that my trilogy is actually urban fantasy, right? It would definitely fall into this genre. Because it's set in our world, yes, it's set in the future, but it's set in our world. But there are some things in this story that are not of this world, things that come from a dimension outside of our scientific three. Now, the story itself could be considered sci-fi on some level, right? Because I'm having to describe this world 100 years from now, and there's space travel, and there's things like that. So it could be viewed as science fiction. But that's not the point of the story. That's just the backdrop for the rest of the story and for the twist, because it's the twist that gets the screen time. It's the twist that is part of the main plot to the whole story. And it's the thing that our main characters are second guessing every time they see or experience this other thing, right? They have all sorts of things that they hold true in their life, based on the technology and the world that they live in. But this twist is something that throws them for a loop. For them, you know, they aren't living in a sci-fi world. It's just the world to them 100 years from where we are today. But in the same way, for us, right, seeing an alien in real life today would jolt us, right? If you were walking down a street and you saw a real alien walking towards you, it would freak you right out. So for these people 100 years from now, it's the same thing, right? They have a whole different set of reality, but for them, this twist is the thing that makes them shake in their boots or makes them feel like their world is out of control. So fun. I can't wait to write some of those crazy scenes. But for now, here we are. World Building 101. Chapter 3, How Far Is Too Far? So we've basically walked through the world building process, and I've talked to you about some of the things that I have come up with for my big idea and the world that I need to build for my big idea. But I wanted to end with this, and it's the question, how far is too far? And I'll ask it of you as much as I'm asking it of myself. But in terms of my big idea, I had to ask myself, how far is too far? First of all, I have to think through this on some level because I'm choosing to tell a story that's 100 years in the future. This means the world of present day is not going to look like today, right? There won't be gas-powered cars. I'm assuming we won't have iPhones. It'll be some advanced version of mobile technology. My guess is televisions will look totally different or act or work totally different. All of the things that I have to wrestle with if I'm going to tell a convincing story. But the question, how far is too far? For example, it's up to me to decide how technology has changed the world. I can suggest that we use implanted digital devices to allow us to interact with the world and the internet at the same time, sort of like augmented reality on some level. Or I could go even further and say that people have become part digital, that over time we've learned how to incorporate mechanical elements into the human body so that now we're more part human, part robot. See what I mean? As I flesh out my world, I'll need to be very careful to ask myself, how far is too far? How far do I really want to go down that slippery slope? And this is something that I literally learned today as I was listening to that YouTube clip from Abby Emmons on world building. She was pretty clear that less is more, that you don't want to info dump massive amounts of exposition throughout your story simply to discuss the amazing world that you came up with in your head. And most definitely not right at the beginning of your story. Her recommendation is to literally leak information slowly but surely along the way. And only the elements of the world that directly impact the protagonist or the characters right then and there. Over time, all of these little bites of information add up to the reader getting a good feel, a pretty clear picture of the world that you created. But they are getting these pieces in bite-sized chunks that they can handle. And sometimes even subtly, while they're reading about the protagonist or the characters, or they're hearing, you know, dialogue from your characters, they're getting these little bits and pieces along the way. And she goes back to the whole Chronicles of Narnia thing and how the children went through the wardrobe one at a time. And each time one of the characters went into the wardrobe, you learned a little bit more about Narnia, right? A little bit more about this world that they were walking into. There was never a big factual world-building info dump at the beginning to tell you what the world was like that you were walking into. You had to learn it little by little by little as the story went along, only when it was important to the character or the protagonist. So what about you? If you're a creative, if you're writing a story, if you know are a writer or an author, have a big idea that requires world building, where are you at? And how did you come up with these various elements? And at some point, did you have to ask yourself, how far is too far? And if so, how did you figure that out? What ruler did you use to draw that line? Let's land the plane. So I think I've reached the end, folks, of world building. Obviously, I have a lot to do still, a lot to finish up, but that is the chunk that I bit off this week, is I really dove into world building and try to figure out, knowing that my story is 100 years in the future, how am I going to create a world that is both technologically advanced, but yet not over the top? Like, I'm not trying to write another Star Wars or a Star Trek or something so far in the future that becomes the main backdrop of the entire story. I'm trying to create a technologically advanced world that feels very much like our world. Like, you could see yourself 100 years from now, if you live that long, you could see yourself living in that world and not being freaked out by the number of changes that happened technologically. So that's where I'm at right now. It's a steep learning curve, and my brain is probably going to explode, but that's okay. I'm thankful that you were willing to join me on this brain dump about world building, and I hope it was interesting and helpful in some way. So just to finish things up, I just finished the book Story by Robert McKee. I think I mentioned it before, but I literally felt like I was back in school again, reading a textbook with sacred knowledge that every reader must know in order to swim and not sink. Great stuff. Definitely an amazing resource to have on your shelf. Too much information to wrap into your brain all at one time. But again, just core, the stuff that McKee talks about is just core information that a novelist probably understands these days. And for me, being new to the craft, I don't know a lot of this stuff. So it's been an amazing journey to read this stuff, to really immerse myself in the world of writing and storytelling, to soak up some of that stuff that's just foundational to telling a good story. Since I finished that book, I'm right now diving into Story Genius by Lisa Krohn. It was recommended by a good friend of mine recently. And I'm already a few chapters in, and I'm realizing that she is going to slap some people around. So we've talked about pantsers and plotters, and she's already laid out a theory, not a theory, but she's basically saying that plotters and pantsers are both wrong, that you really need to be somewhere in the middle, and you need to start your story from the conflict that the protagonist is going to experience, or the story arc, the character arc that your protagonist is going to go through, that is the core of story. And that, sure, you can plot out what that means from an internal story arc and then eventually get to your external stuff. But what she's saying is that pantsing is way too light on the planning, and that plotting is way too focused on the external story and not enough on the internal transformation that's happening with your protagonist. So that's where I'm at so far in the book. I'm going to keep reading it, try to figure out, you know, where this little rabbit trail leads. But I like it so far, and it's just, you know, more information to help you along the journey. So I also have the book Holly by Stephen King sitting on my bedstand. It's crying out, read me, read me. But all in good time when I have time. So I think that's it, folks. Life is good. I'm loving the process, and I can't wait to keep moving forward. We'll get together in a few weeks. The next episode, my plan is to walk through characters and locations, but don't hold me to it. Based on my progress, I may have something totally different to talk about by then, and that might trump my previous idea. So, but that's okay. It'll be fun either way. So I think that's it for this episode. We'll end things here. Have a great week, everyone. And as always, keep transcending human.